According to his power that is at work within us. To him be glory.
Welcome back to our important topic of improving contractor safety performance. This is our second section, and I am your host, David Griffith, and my two guests with over 60 years of combined experience dealing with all aspects of contractor safety are Jerome Speer and Jeremy Lancaster. So we had our topic broken into five different sections, and the first two are on the first part, pre-qualification and safety and health contract requirements. We're into our third area of work in progress assurances. So welcome back, Jeremy and Jerome.
Thank you, Dave, for having us again.
All right, so great information in the first section. We're going to continue on with your expertise in this second section. We left off just before our third area, which is work in progress assurances. So, you know, field safety oversight, you know, why is that so important? What does that look like in the field? And if you could elaborate on some of your expertise in that area.
Yeah, so I'll go first. The first thing I think about with all the areas that we've talked about, you know, we talked pre-qualification, we talked about contract requirements. I believe, and maybe we can even debate this back and forth or see if Jerome, which direction you shake your head. I think the field oversight portion, Dave, is the most critical. I think it's the most effective at reducing risk, ensuring that we don't have incidents, back to making the case, you know, why, reducing liability risk, preventing incidents. It starts with having strong supervision who know the requirements, who know all this. Okay, what were the training requirements like we talked about previously? What are the qualifications that somebody needs to have? What are the confined space entry requirements? You know, there's a lot of stuff that a first level supervisor, a first level leader, whatever your term the listeners use for their supervision in the field, that role is critical, and that's what this step is having somebody who supervising that group of workers through managing and influencing. And they're not the same, by the way. That can be a different podcast that we can have. Making sure that the requirements are being followed. So I say it over and over again. It's critical at this phase from the assurances. And when you get into assurances, this gets into a lot of okay, what are the follow-ups? What's the auditing? I'll come back and talk more from an owner's perspective here in just a moment. But those are the things that I think about at this step and this critical step of the process once the work's moved into the field. What do you think, Jerome?
Right. Well, it's a matter of inspecting what you expect. And that's why it has to be clearly defined in the contract documents, what's expected, what's required. Because if you have a field guy inspecting the job site and it's something that's not a regulatory standard, it's something that's special for that particular project, and they try to enforce it, but it's not in a contract, they don't have a leg to stand on as far as trying to enforce that at that phase without getting a change order or something else. So I view it, they're all equally important, is my perspective. And when I testify at trial, and you may hear me say this, and ultimately if you have a contractor or employee that's injured on a job, it's very likely as a host employer, you're going to be brought into a lawsuit. Sometimes the inspectors, you know, a third-party inspector may be brought in a lawsuit, and that happens sometimes as well. But, you know, there's a lot of blame shifting that goes on at that stage, and a general contractor will want to blame the employer for not providing a workplace for recognized hazards. Well, they do certainly have liability being their employee. But regardless of whether or not it's an employee or a contract employee, the basic premise of preventing an injury is to, one, establish the policies and procedures that the employee or contractor has to follow, communicate and train those employees on those policies and procedures. And the third one is to enforce those policies and procedures That's the only way to assure those, the three basic premises to preventing incidents.
Good. And there's a lot of detail in here. And very important phase of contractor safety. If you guys could talk about practically, what does this look like on the job site? So, you know, the contractor is violating an expectation. What's the most effective way to address that? And what does that look like? You know, I know there may be areas where people are afraid to overstep their boundaries or whatever, but how does that work out on the practically? And what do you see working best in that area?
First thing that I think about, Dave, and whether this is a general contractor, a GC, a general contractor with a contractor or subcontractor, or an owner, a facility owner with contractor workers, it's still the same from my view. The first thing I think about is building relationships. And listeners may say, yeah, that's pretty basic. But another twist to this is building relationships takes time. And time on project, and I'm talking real. Again, I've lived it, and I bet most for those that are listening will shake their heads yes. Is everyone wants to engage and be involved and spend time with those assurances, but you run into time barriers. You start getting pulled in all different directions. You want to go out and look at the job. You want to go interface with the workers, but you don't take the time to do it. So what does that look like? Back to your question, Dave, is it's ensuring that you're spending time in the field with those work activities that are occurring, spending time talking about safety with a purpose, understanding what the requirements are, whether it's personal protective equipment, and I'll challenge the listeners. Most everyone understands that and what's required for PPE most of the time. But dig deeper of, okay, what, back to the contract language like we were talking about, what are the safety requirements? What are the fall protection requirements? And then making sure that they're being followed by using your soft skills, sometimes your managerial skills, to ensure that the workers are doing what they need to. But you have to build that relationship first. This could be another spinoff podcast, is because you got the approaches, the techniques, it takes relationship building to be able to get that acceptance and get the compliance that you're looking for and the culture beyond compliance.
Yeah, so to answer your question, it looks different depending on a job site. So you have different extremes where you have a large job site with a lot of support functions, including on-site full-time safety staff to a 2, 3, 4, 5 man crew building, you know, digging a trench, installing a sewer or water line or something like that. And so let's take, for instance, a larger project. And it's really not based on the number of people, employees you have on site, whether or not to have a full-time person on site, whether it's the contractor itself or a owner's rep or general contractor's rep. It's based on the activities involved. Now, if you have a lot of people, a lot of contract workers there, you need some help to help train them, get them through the orientation and training programs and provide assistance to the superintendents and stuff like that. But I've been on job sites where we're doing a hot tap on top of an LNG tank in New Jersey in a vapor space. Okay. There's only one welder, one supervisor, myself on top of the sink in Carlstadt, New Jersey. So it depends on the activities are more important as far as whether or not you need, what kind of presence you need on a job site, you know. And so, and whether or not you shut down a job for a violation or not depends on the risk as well. So for instance, all of it should be communicated because an incident is any deviation from an acceptable standard. Okay, and really, if you investigate the root causes at that level, it's a lot more effective. It's a lot more efficient to do so. But for instance, if I'm going around, I'm an owner's representative, whether I have a full-time person there on site or we're doing periodic site visits, we're noting our observations. That's being communicated through some form of schedule meeting or some correspondence going back to the with your findings back to the contractor's project manager, typically, or superintendent. But whether or not there's some instances where you may have to shut down a job before they move forward, and that depends on the risk. For instance, if somebody there's no fall protection, where somebody can there's an immediate danger of somebody falling and dying on a job site, and lack of fall protection is at a high level risk on a construction job site. And then working in an unprotected trench would be another one. Those are two examples. So it just, like I said, it just looks different depending on the type of project it is.
Good. I like what you had to say about, you know, there's different situations. So the most effective method may vary. But then I love what Jeremy had to say about your relationships as the foundation so that you can influence towards safety. Just some great, great content there.
Yeah, and Dave, everything that Jerome's describing there, as I listen to that, and you know, every one of those examples, those different levels require some level of action by, back to what we were talking about earlier of the pendulum to kind of swing, it used to be a hands-off approach, and then it's moved to more hands-on. You have to have some level of hands-on to get that level of assurance, and whether it's through, again, building the relationships, auditing with the feedback, depending on what you find, how much action needs to be taken. Either any of these methods, you have to be involved and act. And if listeners aren't doing that now, please take that as consideration on how to improve contractor safety in your space.
Can I bring up one other thing that it's a very important element that actually goes, it precedes this step here. And that goes into project planning and designing safety into the project. And that really should be ahead of the worksite verification. And that's a process, and it's described in my article, and it's a process, meaning you're designing, that's where you're more effective at preventing incidences in the design phase of the project. For instance, we talked about fall protection. There are situations where we can put up guardrails on grading or structural members or attach anchorage points, tie off anchorage points for fall protection systems. On the ground, we do this all on the ground before it's hoisted up and set in position. So all that's all ready to go so nobody's at risk. So you have the guardrails in place. And there's many examples. And that's become more of we're getting better at designing safety into the project. Now, this is something I identified back in when I wrote the original paper back in there in 2003, I think. I did a project on where I wrote this paper. And it wasn't as prevalent now as far as a concept that's talked about as it is now.
Good. So I'm hearing you design the project with clear expectations. You need a plan of action to inspect what you expect so that the job site will respect those expectations. So excellent stuff there. And your expertise would be a great resource for anybody planning work and ensuring that the work is done safely. We'll be right back after this break. Spear and Lancaster is an expert safety, process safety, and industrial hygiene consulting firm dedicated to helping organizations increase profits using risk management and incident prevention techniques. Spear and Lancaster has over 60 years of combined experience assisting hundreds of national and international organizations in achieving greater profitability by reducing workplace risks. So we'll move on to our fourth area of owner, general contractor perspectives and expectations. And so some of this may go back to what we've talked about previously, but what are general contractors and owners looking for in a contractor in this area of safety performance?
Yeah, and this one, Dave, I wanted to carve it out. It is a bridge towards everything previous and then what we're going to talk about last around performance evaluations and feedback, but I'll use my, from an owner perspective first, is it's owners have very high expectations and should. And in this example, I'm specifically talking about the major players in industry, facilities that have process safety risks, petrochemical and refining owners who've been, you know, you're always dealing with contractors. You've got a lot of different contractors. I could talk for, and don't worry, I won't. I could talk for an hour around examples where I've seen where if those expectations were not met in a very concise manner, owners are looking for a different contractor. So I share that because if you haven't experienced, that's also motivation, or it should be motivation for you if you're wanting to work or continue to work in facilities, is owners have high expectations. And I've worked with, I've been on the side where contractors have been removed from a facility until they've met certain performance standards before being allowed to come back. And that example I'm sharing has been within the last year. So it's very important to understand that owners have those expectations to reduce risk. And it's if you listen to this and you act on it, it's free. It's a free lesson for contractors. And so that's from an owner perspective around expectations and alignment. Anything you think about there, Jerome?
It depends on the owner. I mean, he's coming from a petrochemical background. So those are the most sophisticated types of owners to work for. They have the more stringent requirements in order to set foot on the inside the gates. You have to meet these expectations. There's a lot of owners, general contractors, who are a lot less sophisticated and don't have those expectations, or don't communicate those expectations and don't incorporate that into the contract.
Good. So communication, aligning expectations are, again, essential in this whole goal of safety performance. And you spoke a little bit about it, Jeremy, but in terms of consequences for noncompliance, what do you see in terms of that?
And again, we've talked about, and we stated it first for a reason at the beginning. It is, you know, the most obvious consequence is, you know, somebody getting hurt. The reality is, even though Jerome and I deal with it a lot with what we do with expert witness and some of our case studies that we're involved with, most of the time that ultimate consequence doesn't happen. So that's why it consequences can be morale with your workers, if you're not creating a safe work environment. Certain owners, as Jerome states, in bigger industries, a bigger owner representatives like I come from, not being allowed to work even if you haven't had one of those events. So there's other reasons beyond just having an incident to make the case as to why we need to improve. It's going to help your morale. It really will. If you know, you supply personal protective equipment, your employees see you taking time out for safety, planning the job, getting trenching and shoring in place, providing fall protection, it's going to make a difference with your workers.
Good. Some excellent content. On our fifth area, as we move to that, our fifth area is performance evaluations and feedback. And this really helps the learning in what happened, not just to give feedback, but to inform future situations. So why do you see feedback as so important?
Well, I give you my perspective on this. And really it starts with the actual worksite in progress verification and assurances, and when you see deficiencies, that's communicated back to the respective contractor. So you're providing them constant feedback and their responsiveness on correcting those violations or notices of deficiencies promptly, and maintain that communication. That's part of that performance feedback loop. But this is talking about ultimately, the decision has to be determined. Does the contractor, do they perform well enough to main? Do we still want to keep working with this particular contractor? So it's a multidiscipline approach. So it's not just a safety feature. So it goes into their people. It's a multidisciplinary team. They get together and they talk about the contractor's performance. They may even have some objective criteria to evaluate the contractor on at the end of the project. And based on that score and their performance, they, as a team, they make a decision whether or not to keep them on the bidders list or not for future jobs.
You know, here, Dave, you know, everyone needs feedback. We all may not want it, whether that's at home with a significant other, but it's needed to know where you stand. Are you meeting those requirements? Are you, and what I've seen in my career is a lot of times, and it goes back to relationships, whether you're on the job or at home, is a lot of times you don't communicate frequently and often enough to make sure that there's good alignment. And that's what this is making sure those, as Jerome described, mechanisms along the way, but establishing times, milestones, end of a project, certain periods where you're given that formal feedback. And hopefully you've got the relationship between contractor, general contractor, owner, contractor, where that is, that communication and feedback is acceptable both directions, because you're going to run into barriers if you don't. And I could spin off on some of those discussions also. You have to be willing to accept feedback from contractors, or as a general contractor, as an owner. It goes both directions. So think about that and how that relationship is working for those that are listening.
Good. So I want to tap into your over 60 years and feedback, performance evaluation. I like what Jerome said about multiple areas are part of this. So if we have two contractors that have done a similar job, what are some of the top areas for evaluating their performance? I mean, even beyond safety, like how would you, because these contractors are being compared, their future, you know, competition, they're being compared on these metrics. So to get some specific terms in there, we've talked about it kind of generally, you know, performance feedback, the importance of feedback. I like what Jeremy said about two-way feedback. But what are some specifics if you're trying to decide which of two contractors to go with for the next project? What are some specific areas?
Well, you're talking about the aside from the quality and the, you know, whether or not it's on schedule, those are going to be really important as well. But from a safety perspective, were there any injuries on the job site, you know, on the project, you know, and were there any significant injuries or incidents? And were they responsive to violations or alleged violations or notices of deviation from the contract, you know? So I mean, those are the kind of the downstream indicators as far as incidents and how well they communicate, really. I mean, I've been on jobs where and done many audits on project sites, and I get different extremes. I go to one, the foreman tells me what he thinks I want to know. I go back to next week and it still has the same condition. Okay. I rather deal with a superintendent who's up front, who maybe even seem argumentative with me. At least I know where I stand with him, you know, whether or not he disagrees with me or not, you know, on what the issue is. So you have different personalities and different, you know, I like someone who at least I know where I stand and who's going to at least tell me the truth and be honest how he feels as far as what my findings are.
Excellent. Well, we've had some great insight here today. So if companies want to improve their approach to contractor safety performance, what are there any resources you'd recommend?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there beyond just, you know, there's OSHA standards and guidance. The OSHA Process Safety Management Standard talks about contractor safety and some field oversight requirements. There's ANSI standards on multi-employer worksite that gives some good guidance, proactive things to have in place. There's some of the pre-qualification databases and networks that I'd mentioned earlier. Those are a few of them that are out there. We've got published articles. We've got stuff on our website around contractor safety beyond just what some of the articles that Jerome referenced in you, Dave, that he's written.
And the ANSI A10 series of standards is a construction related ANSI standards, which is the American National Standards Institute. And they do have a standard for multi-employer work sites, a standard for safety programs, safety and health programs. And a lot of their standards are at least incorporating parts of the responsibilities of the owner and pre-qualifying and selecting contractor and having criteria established. So those standards are incorporating at least some of these elements that we talked about here today.
Great. Well, as the host, I want to thank our expert guests, and I want to thank the listener. In summary, successful contract management requires the involvement of various owner and contractor representatives. The key to improving performance is through the integration of safety and health into the contracting process, which includes formal pre-qualification and contractor selection criteria, and incorporating requirements into the contract. Since designing and planning with construction safety in mind provides the greatest opportunity to minimize incidents in the field, formal safety and health reviews should be performed during the designing and planning phases of the project. Contractors' performance should be evaluated both during and upon completion of the project to not only provide feedback to the contractor so that they can improve their performance, but also to determine if the contractor should be considered for future projects.
According to His power that is at work within us,
to Him be